Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore.
The Media Project is underway. I was just quoting a little scripture before we started here, and it didn't seem to be appreciated, so I'll save it.
No, we very much appreciate it. Yeah, we know that your father was a preacher and your brother was a preacher and that you went to Columbia.
This brief biographical sketch. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, your ostensible host for this program. That was Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, kindly providing a little bit of background in my history. Thank you, sir.
Sure.
And Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Hello, Rex. I was not a preacher. My father was not a preacher. If you look up the rabbi in the dictionary, you won't see my picture. It's just sort of, I'm just sort of a floater, like a Macy's balloon.
Oh,
actually.
You do? Oh, Macy's balloon. That's an interesting self-description. But I do think, you know, you have rabbinical aspects to you.
I don't know about that.
Teacher.
You know, I ask you a question, you ask me a question back.
Oh, that's a fair point. I do ask a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Media news of the week. We get into probably the top story. It comes out of Washington, and that is the Attorney General, Eric Holder, saying that justice might not, in fact, jail a New York Times reporter, what do you know, for defying a subpoena that would have forced him to discuss his confidential sources. Now, what's interesting about this is, well, let's just take a step back first, and then we'll talk about what's interesting. The case involves James Risen, reporter for the New York Times, who published a book called State of War, and he was subpoenaed to reveal where he got some of the information. He declined, said he'd go to jail rather than do that. So Holder is saying that notwithstanding the justice subpoena, maybe Risen won't be forced to go to jail.
So what he said was, on my watch, no reporter's going to go to jail. No, he never specifically referred, as you know, Rex, to Risen.
Yes.
But that was the takeaway from the comment, because he's the latest in the sacrificial repertorial lambs to go before the guillotine. How's that for mixed metaphors?
That's right. I didn't know that they use guillotines and lambs, but it seems inefficient.
Well, you know, Holder's office seems to have been at odds with what the president was saying regarding unencumbered access and, you know, respect for freedom of the press. And I'm glad to see that they appear to now be heading for the same page. The cynic in me wonders whether or not Holder can afford to say this now, because there's only about 2.5 years left in the administration.
That's a long time, Ira.
Well, I don't know that if any case that might go before a court would be substantively concluded on their watch, and so he could sort of have it both ways by bringing it to the Supreme Court and at the same time saying we're not going to jail this reporter.
Well, the fact is, the Obama administration has been really hard on the media. The Obama administration has brought criminal charges in 8 leak cases, compared with 3 under all the previous administrations combined. And so this has prompted journalism organizations to complain. There have been at least 2 major delegations that have gone in to meet with the Attorney General talking about this. And finally, it was at one of these such meetings where Holder said, nobody's going to go to jail. No reporters are going to go to jail. That is a switch, if that's in fact the case.
Well, let me just say that I think that Ira's cynicism may be matched by mine, which is that President Obama's numbers are not that good right now. And, you know, the last thing this president needs is a war with the New York Times over whether or not one of their star reporters goes to jail. And I suspect when you say maybe there's a differential between what the Justice Department is saying and the White House is saying, I'm more likely to suspect there was a phone call between the two saying, okay, you know, it's time to sort of call off the dogs.
And what do you make of the fact, as Rex points out, all of the issues that Obama has had with the press How does that link with the issues that the New York City mayor is having with the press, who's been extremely non-transparent, not inviting press to what used to be typical press events, and the fact that both of these guys, although de Blasio of New York City more so, are liberals? If I was to draw up a chart, I would not expect that the liberal politicians would be as hard on the press as the right-wing politicians.
Well, let me tell you, I'd like to try at that one, if I may. I think that there are two tabloids in New York, two major tabloids, the Daily News and the New York POST, a name I so despise I won't even say it, I spell it. And the POST has been nothing but unkind to de Blasio, who they consider to be their liberal nemesis, clearly. And there isn't a day that goes by that they don't take a shot. It really got very personal when they went after de Blasio's wife, who happens to be African-American, and portrayed her in the worst kind of way as a bad mother and this and that. She had given her own mea culpa about perhaps as a mother she should have been around more, and they took it and they exploited it and they ran with it. Hey, you know, there is nothing more personal than when somebody comes after a member of your family in terms of your reaction. And I know that from long and hard experience myself. So that you have to be very careful when you say with the press. But the press in New York City is a fairly conservative press. And de Blasio sees himself as an agent of change, a progressive change. And so you have two different worldviews clashing here.
It could be, though, think of it this way, that the conservatives in office feel as though they need to reach out more to the media because of their perception that the media is more liberal. And therefore, they need to bend over backwards to accommodate them. De Blasio, in nearly 5 months in office, has barred the media from 53 events and limited access to 30 more, according to an Associated Press analysis of his schedule. On some days, his whole schedule was off limits. More than 20% of his listed events were closed to the media, the AP says. But that's actually a continuation of a trend that began under Rudy Giuliani. I mean, they have been closing things down under Giuliani, subsequently more restricted more recently under Bloomberg, and now de Blasio as mayor in New York City has been more restrictive than either of those two long-term predecessors.
One would not think that you'd mention de Blasio and Giuliani in the same sentence other than they were both mayors.
Well, don't you think, though, that they get the idea after a while that the press is not your friend? They're not their friends.
Right.
And that, you know, if they want something, what is it that you have to do to make an animal like you? You have to feed it. You don't feed it, it might turn on you. I'm simply saying they've gotten the message now. Look, there's conservative ownership of these newspapers, including the Daily News, by the way, even though the guy plays a liberal on television, the publisher, that, you know, aren't your friends. And if they want something, they got to pay for it. And if they don't pay for it, punish them.
Well, that's an outrageous. I agree with you that is surely their point of view, but it's an outrageous one because the press really is the stand-in for the public. You can't have 6 million New Yorkers standing there watching the mayor of New York City do his job, but you can have a handful of reporters there. And when you close things off, you shouldn't be doing that because, well, the media are my enemies. What you're doing is you're closing out the public.
Okay, so there's a difference between what you've just said. And as I always remind you, rectitude, what I always try to remind you is there's a big difference between what is and what should be. Now, there's a little arrogance in what you've just said, and I'm sure everybody who's listening hears it, which is somehow you have said that the stand-in for the public is the news media. What, the POST is the stand-in for me and for my interest? No, they're the stand-in for what Rupert Murdoch's philosophy of government is, and then he's willing to lose a lot of money to do it. But he certainly isn't my representative, and I didn't vote for him.
But by that, then, you would you support the mayor closing out the media, then?
Well, no. I have to finish. I have a okay. Right of reply here.
It looked like you were struggling.
No, I wasn't
he was
struggling.
Just trying to help you
that
out.
That was theatrical. Yes, the answer is, if I were the mayor, I might be doing the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think anybody who runs an organization, whether it's governmental or private sector, is wary of an outside third party looking at what it is you're doing and then reporting on it in the manner that they feel is different often than the way you're doing it.
You're so right.
But the man, in this case, de Blasio, is the mayor of the largest city in the biggest media market in the world.
And, not the largest city, the third largest city.
Okay. And to your point about him reacting perhaps to the way the tabloids characterized his wife in that New York Magazine article, as the AP points out, his actions or non-actions regarding the press occurred the very first day he was in office. He blocked people away from his private swearing-in ceremony to swear him in. And is,
well, the wife thing certainly didn't help things.
I'd like to see that a little bit closer, because this all stems from the Post and the News reporting on what was reported.
And
in
he
New
got
York
up and
magazine.
He shook his finger at them.
Yeah, but
and
who,
said that's not right. And I agreed with him.
Did you read the story that the wife story in the magazine? I don't know that it was as it had a typical tabloid headline.
Yeah.
I was a bad mom. I don't know that the story.
Where would you put that? But everybody reads the headline. They don't read the story.
Well,
not everybody
in New York City.
Yes,
which was, my second point is that yes, the Murdoch connection and the Post and all the rest. But this blanket blocking of the media is also blocking the liberal New York Times and all of the network of TV affiliates.
Alan says that's fine. He would do it if he were mayor, too.
Well, I might. But before you go, I must say, you are absolutely right about one thing, Ira. Nobody likes to have a third party looking in on them. I remember once I needed a column for either the Berkshire Eagle or one of the other papers one weekend. I had nothing, so I had a little time on my hand. I went to the court. It was a perfectly nice judge up on the bench, and I liked him. But I wanted to write a story about a day in court. So I bought a legal pad and a pen, and I sat there in the audience. The clerk of the court came up to me and said, "Judge would like to see you in chambers."
Uh-huh. What are you
and
doing?
He said, "Is there anything I can help you with?" All I was doing was sitting there, you know, hoping that some, you know, miscreant would come up and get sentenced for something. But there was the judge thinking
about
it.
And you know what? I think you made Rex's point in that story, because you, as a newspaper columnist, went to the court to find a story that you felt was worthy for your readers to be exposed to, because all of your thousands of readers were not going to go to court. You were their representative. So whoever reads the Murdoch papers, that may be a whole different audience than reads the Times or watches Channel 4 or listens to WINS, but those handful of people representing those organizations are not only representing themselves and their organizations, they are reporting to the people in the city.
See, I don't agree with you. I know I've said this already, but I don't agree
with you.
Well,
who do they?
The POST does not represent me. It does not.
No,
the questions that they ask and their Weltanschauung, their worldview, is at contrast with mine, and nobody appointed them. I might vote for the mayor, but I sure didn't vote for them.
To go back to it, that means that Alan thinks that it's good for the mayor to exclude the media from events if he wants to. So the public has no right to access to this kind of thing.
Now, stop putting words in my mouth,
Rex. That's what you're saying.
You know,
just because you don't like the Post,
your father was a...
We're not talking about me.
No,
we're talking about your point of view here.
It's not a nice thing for you to try to project words into my mouth that I never uttered.
Speaking of exposure to things, Murdoch's paper in Sydney, the Daily Telegraph, likes a little exposure. They have done something quite unusual, taking issue with what they call an antiquated code of etiquette, and they have published a roundup of photographs of the Duchess of Cambridge's bum, as they would say in the UK.
A mighty wind came up and lifted up her skirts. And then the question was whether it's fair game for them to publish, you know, the exposed derriere.
Their social writer, one woman named Annette Sharp, she writes, "If the Duchess can't be bothered protecting herself by having hem weights
That's
sewn
ridiculous.
Into her garments, why should the media protect her?" Hem weights, I tell you, I never knew there were such things as hem weights.
Yeah, they sold
them. Well, you've seen the picture?
Yes, yeah. with the images blocked out. I haven't
actually
seen
it. Must have been in the Post. I don't know where else I would have seen it. So if that picture crossed your desk, if the Duchess had been visiting Albany and at the airport, of you know, the wind blew, would you run that picture, do you think?
And did it expose?
Yeah, yes. As they say, the bum, the buttocks were exposed.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's an interesting thing. By the way, hem weights are £1.50 for a packet of four.
Do you think you would?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, in this morning's tabs in New York City.
Yes, just lean right into the microphone there, Alan.
In this morning's tabs in New York City, the daughter of an actor and an actress walking around exposed at the top, which is not.
Oh, I saw that yesterday.
Which is not illegal.
Right.
In New York City.
Yes.
You know?
She was protesting something.
Yeah, well,
she?
I mean, she said she's
proud. You can go topless in the city?
Yes.
Yes, you can.
I didn't know that.
And she's proud of her physicality, and she doesn't want anybody telling her what she can do. I mean, after all, you don't arrest a man for walking around topless, and so...
Well, it's just interesting that there are standards, and then they're changing, and in different type of...
Well, should
media.
They, Rex? Come on, Rex. Go right up to the line. Well, do you think that she's right? She's quite attractive.
The Sydney Daily Telegraph is the...
Well, in this case, the Tabs in New York City published it with a, you know, black line across the sensitive area. Uh-huh. And I'm just wondering, because, you know, you're an editor, a top editor. Do you think that that woman who professes feminist instincts should be allowed to walk around and photographed by the newspaper? Would you put it on your front page?
Those are two different questions. No, I would not. Nor would I publish the photo of the Duchess of Cambridge's bum. But that doesn't mean that she shouldn't have a right to walk around that way. I'm just saying that there are standards, and they are shifting. It is true that we publish stuff that we might not have some years ago, but not a lot. You know, Americans are particularly sensitive about blood. Americans don't like to see dead bodies, for example, even in the aftermath of a hurricane or a horrible mass killing. Americans will not tolerate journalism that shows, and it therefore limits our truth-telling. If we can't show this because the dear sensibilities, the sensitivities of American readers suggest, oh, we don't dare look at a dead body.
So you don't like that?
I think it's outrageous. I actually do.
I think it's outrageous that a woman is put into a second-class situation for not being allowed to walk around and show her top.
So you would publish a topless photograph?
I would think.
Interesting. So why don't you?
Yeah.
Well, you have.
The good thing about the radio is you have access
to it here. You have a website. You could put topless photos on your website here. We're all multimedia journalists nowadays.
But I think the question here in my mind is, one, a newspaper certainly has the right to publish this kind of picture if it's the kind of picture that it ordinarily prints. So, for example, a tabloid, or I'm not familiar with this Australian paper, but it's a Murdoch paper. That is probably a newspaper that has printed pictures of scantily clad women. Whereas my newspaper, I don't think I would.
One of the great words of the English language, by the way, scantily.
Scantily. But isn't the more specific question here not that they printed a picture of a woman exposing her rear end, but that it was the Duchess? And should that make a difference?
Well, of course.
If it was...
Rank has its privileges.
So the Duchess caught in that kind of an embarrassing situation, the press should look the other way.
What is the most famous picture of Marilyn Monroe ever?
Right.
But it shows her pulling down her skirt. Doesn't show.
Yeah, and it didn't show anything because in those days the undergarments were more than.
It's all very suggestive.
If you would like to join this conversation, we are media@wamc.org. If you'd like to set us straight, please. media@wamc.org. It's the media project from Northeast Public Radio.
I can't believe Alan said that.
Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith. That would be the professor, the publisher, and the editor. And we welcome your comments, absolutely. Here's a good question for you. We are in the commencement season. A lot of folks are graduating. And the question would be, if your kid wants to go into journalism, would you advise that? John Humphreys, a presenter on the UK's Radio 4 program today, has said, as to my advice for aspiring journalists, that's easy. Don't do it. I am deeply pessimistic for the future of serious print journalism, and I tell my own children and grandchildren to train for a profession where they're more likely to get a decent job with some hope of security. So, folks?
I'm always astounded. I've said it before. I'll say it again as a person who teaches aspiring journalists. How many people want it? You can talk to them till the cows come home. They want to do it. And as I often said, as a young, aspiring PhD political scientist, all my colleagues said, you'll never get a job. You'll be driving a hack like the rest of us. I got a job. I did fine. There'll be people. There'll always be jobs. I've had students this year getting very good jobs on newspapers, and there's always some jobs.
Oh, listen, there has never been a more exciting time to go into journalism. If you're saying, as this person seems to be saying, this is not a good time to go into print journalism and isolating it to print journalism, there may be some merit to that because of the uncertainties of what the future of print journalism is. But the fact that newspapers, print newspapers, have expanded to all sorts of other media, the fact that there are so many other kinds of media out there, there's always going to be need for journalism. So I don't discourage people from wanting to be journalists. It's still a extremely important profession and a worthwhile profession. But, you know, if your mind is set on working for a newspaper and you think that for the next 40 years that print newspaper is going to be there, that may be a little bit optimistic.
Well, yeah, start your own.
Well, you may be right, Alan. It may be something almost like that. Start your own. It may be that while people have traditionally gone into small newspapers and taken a beat there, that may be difficult to do because there are fewer jobs available. But if you're And I think part of the problem is journalism programs, where a lot of young people are trained, are being taught by old guys like me who don't have all the skills that young journalists need to have to go into the multimedia world that they now find themselves. And so if they are only equipped to do the kind of work that I was equipped to do when I came out of school, they're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, but things have changed for you too, Rex, and you're rising to the occasion every day as you send your reporters out with cameras and tripods and doing all that kind of stuff. And let me tell you something else. I have a theory about young people, as my children were. They are born with computer knowledge. I mean, literally, their DNA includes computers. When I was on my first CAPRO, my kid came in and said, he was 10 years old, he said, do it this way. They know it.
Sure, they're born to it, but they sure do have a lot more skills than we did. And as I look at young journalists, we have a crop of interns in the newsroom this summer, and many of them seem to have some. You're right. They have.
You're learning from them.
Yeah, that always happens.
Yeah, I mean, you made the point. Since I've left working full time, a lot of people have encouraged me to go into teaching as an adjunct. And if you would ask me to do that 5 or 10 years ago, I would say, yeah, I'm eminently qualified to do that. I'm not so sure I'm as qualified. I don't think I'd be as comfortable walking into a classroom now because so much of what I know, everything of what I know, is print journalism, and I've learned certainly a lot of the new technology. But I'm not sure that the class wouldn't know more than I do coming into the class.
Here's a question. We had a mass homicide once again at UC Santa Barbara. There was a rampage in Isla Vista, and there was a 141-page manifesto written by the killer, Elliot Roger. Here's a question. Would you publish that? What's the value of publishing the manifesto in which he explains why he went on a killing spree?
Well, the Unabomber, we did that, right? We published Kaczynski's work. Again, Rex, goes to your point, which you're always shoving down our throats, which is that we are, you know, that the people are entitled to know what's going on in people's other people's minds. It gives us a clue.
Except if you're the mayor, they're not. You would keep them out.
I didn't say they weren't. I just simply said I understood his penchant for getting even.
I think the mistake that newspapers and others make, including mine, and we did something on my watch several years ago where we printed, in effect, the manifesto of someone who committed murder and then suicide, killed his wife, then killed himself. And it was a very long screed filled with a lot of nasty words, and we printed it unedited. And
really?
That was a mistake in hindsight.
You're allowed to do that?
But I think you needed to report what was going on in the guy's mind, but I don't think we needed to expose the public.
Well,
to
once
the unvarnished
you, but yeah, but
version.
Once you do that, once you start to edit, you know, the impact.
Well, we edit all the time. We don't
That's no excuse.
And you put it in context.
I
think that's exactly the right idea.
I don't agree.
The same approach, our Art Kaplan, who is the head of ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center, says it's the same thing, for example, if you're publishing medical research by Nazi doctors. Look at the context in which they're doing it. The research itself may have yielded valuable insights, notwithstanding the horrible nature in which the research was conducted.
Well, I don't know, Rex. Very quickly, let me just say that when the European election, parliament elections just went by and some neo-Nazis were elected, and one of them said, you know, Hitler didn't even know about the Holocaust. Okay, so there was this statement, Hitler didn't even know. The guy gets elected. Okay.
Jeez.
So here's the point. When you have a Nazi doctor talking about why they're doing these experiments, this becomes part of the historical record. I think it's very important, and I think their own words betray them.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's the case, for example, in this killer's manifesto. It's valuable to put it out there to let people know what he's thinking. But, you know, maybe you can even do something that maybe the Post did something right. The New York Post labeled it as the ravings of a lunatic. And at least in that way, maybe that was the right kind of context. Ha! A good word about the Post. You heard it here. Amazing. All right. That's all for the Media Project this week. The publisher, the professor, and the editor join us again. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
About some charming people I have known, for I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people, they wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, Pull the press, pull the press. Extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old...